Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of the Mental Toughness and Body Show. On this show today, we're going to talk about success in investing through some life insurance products, and we're going to talk about the concept of infinite banking as well. Now, this is an area where most people might have their car insured and might have their house insured and stuff. And scarily, some people don't, but we often don't think about life insurance and so forth. So we're going to dig into that today. And so on this show today, we have interviewed people from all walks of life, from our A-list celebrities to billionaires to Olympic gold medalists. And today we have a specialist. We have from all the way from Canada, Richard Canfield. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Yeah, excited to be here, Rob. It's going to be a ton of fun. Hopefully we can add a lot of value to all the great listeners you have.
I'm sure you will. So my first question for you is maybe just tell us a little bit about who you, because people, you know, this goes to like 70 something countries. So there'll be people out there that don't know who you are, what you do. Tell us a little bit about that and what's brought you to your niche, because you're in a very specific niche when it comes to investing.
Well, I grew up in a small farming community here in Western Canada, and I call myself the heir to the portable toilet kingdom of Camrose, Alberta. So that's, you know, we used to have a business where we would deliver portable toilets to job sites and, you know, rodeos and all these kind of events. And so I grew up in that environment. So we were working hard. And it was this family business model where we thought we were in business, but really all we were doing is working really hard for ourselves. We were just employed by ourselves. It was a job. And it was a job where we worked harder than everyone else and we didn't get vacation days. So I just grew up in this world of like work hard. And if you outwork everyone else, everything will be okay. But it turns out everything wasn't okay. And outworking everyone else really didn't seem to take us on the path to success. So after I was able to leave that environment and I went on my own, I actually got an electrical trade. So as a journeyman electrician operating in, you know, in Canada here, it was a great trade. I enjoyed it. It was great to work with my hands. However, not really fulfilling. And I realized early on that I wasn't able to help people in that environment. I'm actually built and designed to help people. It just took me a long time to figure that out. And so that led me to getting my real estate license. And then shortly after doing that, I had a very good colleague and a friend of mine tell me to go buy this book called Becoming Your Own Banker. It was written by an amazing guy named R. Nelson Nash. And that book and the man who wrote the book completely changed everything in my life. There's not a single faucet or aspect of my life, Rob, that hasn't been fundamentally improved and changed about how I live my life now, right down to my relationships. Now, there's nothing in the book about relationships, but understanding the principles that are in it and the man who created those principles allowed me to think differently about every aspect of my life. You know, him and his wife, Mary, who passed away very recently, actually last week, wonderful lady, and Nelson himself passed away in 2019 at the age of 88. They were married for 63 years. Now, that's not common in the world that we live in today. I think globally, it's much less common to see that. So when you see people who have these long marriages, long relationships, they've gone, you know, 63 years, you've been through some stuff. You've seen a lot of ups and downs and you've lived through them and you've come through it on the other side. There's a level of respect you instantly get for someone who's been able to go through that achievement. And that's the kind of person that Nelson Nash was. And so his book about becoming your own banker, unlocking the infinite banking concept, it helped me see that all the money I had spent, you know, you're a coach and you've spent money on coaches. You yourself have a coach. You've had ups and downs in business as the people listening to your show have had. Well, these are lessons. One of the reasons we have coaches is because we want to learn something that they know, or we want them to extract something that we already know and help us show it to us in a different light. Well, Nelson did that. He just did it in the financial category. He helped people understand that if you could control the money as it enters your life and allow you to do more with the same dollar for multiple periods of time, and then also transition it to the next generation in an efficient way, then you could have way more efficiency on the money you're working with. So it wasn't about investing money. It was about controlling the flow of money. And if you have more control over it and you are in the driver's seat of your financial life in that way, you would create a personal economy that would allow you to have more choice and more options and more flexibility with all your future tomorrows. Fundamentally, that's what the process of becoming your own banker allows us to do. And we utilize a type of insurance to incorporate it. It's what makes it efficient. Fundamentally, though, the mindset, the processes that you would use don't require insurance to accomplish it. It's just more efficient if you have the right insurance to put it together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. I think for me, I grew up in a family that, I won't say we were poor, but mum and dad certainly didn't encourage conversations around financial health, mainly because they didn't know. And they just lived sort of pay packet to pay packet. And this was in, you know, they got married in the early 1960s, and it was a different era. So mum wasn't allowed to work. That was a stipulation in the marriage that they could only get married if mum didn't work, which sounds ridiculous, but it was like the man had to support the woman. That was it. And they had a specific role. And mum did that for as long as I can remember. And then she started to work, but she spent pretty much every single thing that she earned. And everything that they learned about financial investing and stuff, I taught them and encouraged them to get a financial advisor. Because I'm going to leave the house. I'm not going to be around to have the conversations with them. And they're just going to keep on spending. They're going to run out of money. And then that's going to end up being a burden on me at some point in the future. It's like, you've got to get this knowledge now. So thankfully they did. And they were able to make the most of it. But because of, I used to hear arguments and just feel the stress in the house and didn't. And of course, when you're younger, you just don't understand. You don't understand why there isn't, you know, why don't you buy a new car? Like, this one's breaking down all the time. Why don't you get a secondhand, you know, newer car? And then, you know, they couldn't afford it. And it was like, I remember the moment, actually. I think we went to look at it. It was like a $3,500 car. And I didn't understand why they didn't have the money to do it, and they still hadn't paid off their £5,000. So we're talking like before it was dollars, it was pounds. I think they borrowed £5,000 for their house. The land was gifted to them, and I was 20, and I'm like, well, what the hell? Like, how can you not have paid this off in, you know, like 25 years or whatever, when you first got this mortgage? I said, I just don't understand. And then now you don't have enough money to like get a replacement car. And it's like, I never wanted to be like that. And that was why I then went on to, you know, study accounting, become a chartered accountant. And I thought I saw that as my ticket to becoming a CEO or something like that, and getting a high income, investing well, and just never being an issue for me. Now, through that process, I did that for 19 years and then went off and ran my own business, and I'm much happier now. But it's through doing all of those things that I developed I guess through the pain of seeing what they were going through and not having the conversations. So I was like, I just don't want to live like that.
Well, that's what happens for so many of us. We are honed by our experiences. And sometimes we're honed in, you know, I have a friend of mine, he says, iron sharpens iron. And so we're always working on our skill sets, but some people don't realize that they're working on it, and they might be working on the wrong skill set and creating a habit that amplifies one that's not conducive to their future versus amplifying one that is conducive to their future. So you got to see through the eyes and the experience of what you didn't want to see happen and make the decision that you were going to make a change to create a different outcome. And so fundamentally, I think most people are aware of that. And there's a point in time where we have a catalyst event of some nature where we say all of a sudden, oh man, this is it. I need to make a different decision going forward. And that gets us on the right path, the path of getting educated, whether it's about finances or it's about our physical health or it's about our day-to-day budget, like something that's going to move you in the direction towards something positive, a positive outlook on the other side. And fortunately or unfortunately, there's a lot of, we call it noise, financial noise in the marketplace all over the globe, certainly in North America. And I suspect in Australia, you guys have this as well, where there's all the marketing in the media and your Facebook feed and your TikTok feed is filled with all this stuff that's trying to get you in to invest in the next best thing, some get rich quick item. And everyone's trying to get the, I want it now. I'm going to put a little bit of skin in the game and hope for the big giant return. And then boy, oh boy, my life is just going to be glorious. And it's almost like a cop out of doing the work to some degree. And this is what happens because of the way the marketing industry is built. And unfortunately, the financial industry has been designed that way for like 40, 50 years. And it's just increased its degree of, I guess, oppressive behavior on how we view things. And then it becomes very transactional versus what has the potential to be transformational for people. Nelson's book, in my opinion, the concept of becoming your own banker it's a process. It's something you do in your life. It actually is a lifestyle. It's not a product that you purchase on a shelf from a financial organization. It's something that you implement over time, and it builds habits, and those habits create, you know, success leaves clues. So if you have something that's proven to be successful and lots of people are doing it and having a lot of success in the process, you can mirror and model what those people are doing. That's what your show does a great job of. You help people see through the discussions of different challenges and issues that they face, how they're overcoming those things, and they're creating better habits and better outcomes because of it. This is a process where we do that simply in the financial category. And rather than figuring out how do we invest more money to be successful, or how do we make and earn more money to be successful, you should absolutely be doing those things. We would encourage everyone to do that. But how do we take what we're already getting? And how do we take the habits that we have with the money that's coming in? And how do we make sure there's a lot more of it left over at the end of the day than what's going out? And then optimizing that same dollar so it can do more for us for the rest of our life. I'll give you an example. And you talked about your parents. So let me bring it to a different perspective where it's me and my own kids, because I know you have kids as well. My kids are 6 and 8 years old, and we now have family banking meetings. So we go on a family vacation, and at the family vacation, I bring this book, Becoming Your Own Banker. I have some other resource materials as well. And I make sure that my wife, I don't make sure, I ask my wife to make sure that there's a treat for the kids available. We just have a short meeting because they're too young right now. But once, as they get older, we're going to make these meetings longer. And the purpose of the meeting is to talk about how we're going to grow the family's wealth and the family's banking system over the next year. And what are we going to do? They're at a stage right now where they don't understand that, but that's okay. They're involved in the conversation. So we're taking the idea of money discussions that suck, which is what people are used to growing up around the house, and the stress that you identified. And we're going to change the habit and change the behavior to have money conversations that are awesome. And we're going to make them fun and engaging. So we are celebrating a family vacation. Hey, kids, tell me all about the things you loved about, oh, we loved the pool and we loved this and our friends. And here's all the things that we did that are so amazing. And we get them to anchor those memories and connect them to a fun financial conversation. And I say, hey, look, kids, now that we've done this, we access money from our family banking system to make this trip a reality. Now, in order to do this next time, you guys want to do that again? They say, yeah, we want to do it again. Well, in order to do that again, we have to start putting the money back into the system so that we can recycle and use that money again next time, so that we're always putting money back into the family bank. Now, they don't understand what it is. They don't understand that there's an insurance contract involved. They don't need to know the mechanics. None of that is relevant, because what they're learning is that through a process and through intention, being very focused and intentional, we use our money differently than other families do. And the result of that is that they're starting to learn that there's going to be something in it for them in the background. So when my kids get older and they're going to go need cars, they're going to need to buy computers, they're going to need to go buy a home, they're going to need to pay for education, they're probably going to need to pay for a wedding. So these are all big ticket items that everyone deals with. Well, most people take out of their savings account, or they borrow from someone else's pile of money to go do those things. They use Visa, MasterCard, you know, and the regular bank loan. My kids won't do that. They're going to access money from the family bank, and there's going to be a payment arrangement. They'll have to make a payment back to the family banking system. But when I go and I pass away and my wife pass away, every single dollar that my kids paid into that system, they're going to get all of it back plus more. So what we're creating is like an aquarium of financial capital. So the money never leaves the aquarium. We're just recirculating the capital, and we're allowing it to grow. The actual size of the aquarium expands as we go throughout time. That's the power of thinking in terms of generations and changing the conversations that we have about money at the household level.
I think what you said before about the habits, I mean, it's the same with your health and wellness, right? Most people know, well, I can't just do nothing and just eat fast food for every single meal of the day and expect to be the healthiest version of me. If you're spending more than you are retaining, then at some point that's going to hurt you somewhere, and you've got to, you know, you do have to form those healthy habits. So why don't you briefly talk about how you work with the the life insurance policies and so forth. I will just preface it by saying I'm not a financial advisor, so you need to get your own independent advice around this, and it does depend on your region too, because I think what you're allowed to do there in Canada, I don't think we can do the same thing here in Australia. Don't quote me, because I'm not a financial advisor, but I don't think you can. I think they stopped like endowment policies and that kind of stuff here when I was a kid. So but I believe obviously in Canada, Canada, and I believe it's the same in the US. You can adopt this system, but make sure you always get your independent financial advice. So why don't you just, it seems quite complicated, so maybe you can just dumb it down for me, pretend I'm one of your 8-year-old kids, to explain how this system works to give you your infinite banking system.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it simple. And so an example would be, I'll actually use a house to explain it, because it'll be more common for most of your listeners. And then we'll just equate that to an insurance contract after. So everyone's familiar with owning a home, owning a piece of property, and that property has value. Okay. The land has value. The property has value. Usually it's the market value, whatever the property would appraise for. What could it sell for on the open market? Okay. And typically most places in the world, there's also a mortgage, or there's a debt instrument attached to that piece of property. So you have a debt amount and you have the value, and whatever's in between there is called the equity. All right. So equity is a source of capital. It's not real money, because you can't, in order to translate it into money, you have to sell the property or do something else. So it'd be referred to as a form of capital. And so what we teach people to do is how to capitalize themselves effectively in a system. So when you get a property, the appreciation of the market, which you don't control, raises the market price. And then paying the loan down, making mortgage payments, reduces the debt. And so what you have there is you have market going up, loan going down. You have something in the middle called arbitrage. All right. That's the jelly in the sandwich. It increases the equity. Now, one of those things, as the consumer, you control. That's the mortgage payment. You don't control the rules about it, but you control making it, and that it produces some equity. So if the market doesn't go up, you can still build equity over time. Make sense?
Yeah.
What you don't control is the market condition. You don't control the appreciation, or if there is any. The market could go up and it could go down. And in Canada, you've probably heard, we know we have a pretty crazy real estate market here. There's a few areas where there's some of the most expensive places to buy property on planet Earth. Vancouver, which I live about an hour away from, is one of the, is the top three most expensive city in the planet to buy housing. It's absolutely insane. Okay. So, it doesn't seem to connect with market fundamentals very well. Now we understand that process. Now imagine, as the equity builds up, and you pay the loan down, value goes up, you could access money on like a home equity credit line or a credit facility that where you could tap into it. And then you could go and buy the things of life, buy coaching services, pay for your kids' education, pay for a wedding, buy a new property, invest in a business, invest in marketing to grow your business, like things that you would do to spend money. But then you were very intentional after you made that expenditure. You created a repayment plan to start putting new money back in to replace what you'd taken. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the house is still going up in value, and the rain mortgage debt is still going down. So you're still creating equity that you can tap into again for the next major expense. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So fundamentally, that process, that is a banking process that's taking place. And it's the same concept of what infinite banking is. The difference is, instead of a house, we use an insurance contract that builds equity just like a house. We use what's called a dividend paying participating whole life insurance contract. Now, they might be called differently in different areas and different countries. As an example, in the UK, I think they're referred to as with profits insurance. Again, I'm not familiar with that in general, but in North America, they're a dividend paying whole life insurance contract. The purpose of these are, when you set these up, you become a co-owner with the insurance company. By having a participating, it means you participate in the profits. You have an ownership stake in what that company does with the money. Okay. And if you work with what's called a mutual company, it's kind of like a co-op. There are no other owners. You can't buy stock in the company. The only way you can have an ownership stake is to have one of these contracts. So that means the insurance company is incentivized to support their owners. to generate profits and return profits to them. Make sense?
Yeah.
So now when I wanted to go borrow off equity in the house, I had to go and ask and beg some third party bank to allow me to access their money. I had to have good credit. I had to have all these dynamics.
Yeah.
But when I have it over here at the insurance company's realm, I have the first right to access anything that could be lent against that contract. I'm borrowing the insurance company's money. I'm not borrowing my money. My money continues to grow on autopilot and it never comes down because unlike the market condition, these contracts allow they're always growing because they're contractually obligated to grow. They don't have the market volatility because it's not an investment structure. So it's a contract. And because I can access capital, I can collateralize that policy and use the insurance company's money to go do the things in life I was already doing. The difference is I also control the repayment terms. So if I don't want to send a payment back, I don't have to. If I want to send a payment back, I can. If I'm really intentional about that, I can create a great deal of control in my financial life. The capital is always rising. The equity is always building. I can tap into it. No questions asked, no credit checks, nothing required. And I can go about doing the same things in life I was already doing. But now I've optimized capital as it's moving forward throughout time. And the worst case scenario is somebody dies. Well, I mean, Rob, that's going to happen anyway. So when it happens, a bunch of tax-free money is going to show up from the death benefit, and it's going to solve a whole lot of problems. Now, if we create a system amongst generations, so as an example with my kids, I have policies on my kids. I'm using them. I own and control them. When I pass away, there's going to be a giant outstanding loan on my kids' policies, but there's going to be a huge tax-free death benefit when dad goes. The kids are going to have instructions to use that money to pay off these loans. And it's like they went back in time 60 some odd years and they got a policy 60 years ago that's mature and has all that value. And then they can keep using it again.
Yeah.
So that's how we can create a cycle of prosperity because of we're able to think long range, think beyond your own lifespan.
So I know if you mapped all this out on a whiteboard, it can look a bit tangled, right? A little bit, because you've got, okay, well, if we insure this person, then, you know, there's kids here, et cetera, et cetera. So in the work that you you're a financial advisor, do you help make these decisions with people to guide them specifically into the right policies and, all right, well, you've got two kids, so let's put these policies, this is the amount you want on them, et cetera, et cetera? Or is that what you do? You're nodding your head. So I'm assuming, yes, that's what you do.
You're correct. Yeah, you're on the right track. I would look at it slightly different, you know, vocabulary. So we're more of a coach in that regard. I am licensed in the insurance industry in Canada. So in order to do this effectively, you need to be working with a licensed individual, but we focus all the effort on the education of understanding what we want to do. Then we help our clients understand how much do they want to contribute to the system. They make that decision, not us. We can help find money. I'm an expert at finding money that people didn't know they had. It's there. Trust me, it's there. We just need to change the way you're allocating the money. Once we do that, we can find a lot of capital that people are using on their day-to-day lives. Then we transition it into premium, effectively designed properly. And there's a lot of flexibility there. We build a lot of flexibility in so that there's minimums and there's maximums. There's a lot of capacity to have change because our lives are dynamic. You know, on a year-to-year basis, hey, some people have extremely predictable income. Other people who are in business and maybe they're just starting, their income's all over the map. So we have flexibility built in to allow people to have control over how they implement this in their lives. And then we spend a lot of our time really after the fact. Once we get that set up, a lot of the real effort goes into coaching you how to do it and use it on an ongoing basis. So we have, you know, a membership site, tons of videos, our own podcast, like, you know, book series, like we're doing everything to make sure that our clients are successful because this is a lifestyle. It's not a thing that you just buy and you set it and forget it.
Yeah.
Your financial life is never set it and forget it. Some people like to think that it's done that way, but it's not. You're always making a decision and you might be abdicating the responsibility to someone else. That's fine. But you're the one making that decision. So it's at that level where we want to help people get educated so they can implement something like this.
Yeah, nicely said. So my take on it all is that this can be quite messy and quite complicated. And I would say to anyone, if this is something where you want to go to someone like you, Richard, to get the coaching, get the advice to set it up properly so that it doesn't end up being a disaster down the track. And it might be a product that you're just stuck with for God knows the rest of your life if you're not careful about it.
Yeah, we actually have an authorized, there's authorized infinite banking practitioners. So I'm one of those. In fact, we just had our annual conference last week that I was emceeing. There's approximately 300 of us in North America. And we work and actually train. So I'm a coach, not only to my individual clients, but also for other advisors who are looking at implementing this as a strategy they want to teach to their marketplace. So yeah, it does require some effort to learn, but once you have it down, it's actually dead simple. Our brain tends to overcomplicate things. So at its simple nature, you need a bank account to go do everything you do. We're just changing where you save money and where you borrow money. Instead of it being in a regular bank, it's now going to be at an insurance company you co-own.
Yeah.
So that's about it.
Yeah. So one of the things I often talk to my clients about is that holistic approach to their health and what that means. So you talk about holistic financial health. What do you mean by that?
Everything that we do circles back. There's, these main categories of your life, and they get out of balance in different ways. A lot of people want to invest money into their physical health through equipment, coaching, better food. These are investments to help make sure your health and longevity are there. Well, you need more capital often to do that. So if we start losing on the capital, well, then we start pulling back on these other levers of life. Likewise, if we put all our money into things like growing our health and wellness or our spiritual side or something like that, then we have a lot less capital available to maybe have a sustainable ability of doing that. So these things need to have a little bit of balance, and we can have a focus on one area. Of course, absolutely. We in year to year basis, people do change their focus, but we have to make sure that we're still striking some measure of balance so that you have the capacity to do these things. What's great about your show and how your conversations that you have with people is you're helping them see how they can generate more income, more revenue, and preserve the things that they have through the different actions that they take and overcoming challenges. So from a financial standpoint, if we can identify, if you had a gas tank and you were leaking gas and you were leaking $5 a day in gas, but how long would you let that go on once you knew about it? You would fix it right away. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people have that happening, but it's not $5 a day. It's like $25 a day or $100 a day. Once they recognize that they have these leaks in their financial life, we can actually work proactively to start plugging those holes and redirecting some of that potential into something that allows it to accumulate. So if we fix some of the core things that are going on where money is disappearing, well, then we didn't have to earn any more money to solve the problem. We just changed the behavior to solve the problem. And then once you have more capital, so there's an expression that opportunities show up to those who are well capitalized. So the more capital you have of access to, the better quality opportunities and the more amount of opportunities show up in front of you. Often they've always been there, but a person doesn't recognize them because they don't have the means to take care of it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the more that we can focus on having your capital pool accumulate, the better armed you are to take advantage of strategic investments. People think investing is putting money away a couple of times a month or, here a piece of real estate or whatever. To me, an investment should only be in something you know a great deal about. Anything else is a speculation, okay? So there's a big difference between an investment product like a mutual fund or a stock or, whatever, exchange traded fund or something like that. That's a product. That's you buying something that someone else built, hoping it's going to go up, versus you have a clear understanding of a niche or a strategy or a marketplace, and you're actually making an investment based on knowledge that you have that's fundamental to you. So you can have a good, reasonable decision-making process. So there's a big difference between those things. And also people think that when they're putting money into these investment structures, with their regular bank or their employer or whatever that is, they're saving money. Well, there's a difference between saving and investing. The definition of savings is that there has to be a measure of liquidity. You need to be able to get access to something. So if it's tucked away into some investment and then you have no liquidity on it, that's not savings. That's investing. And investment also comes with the risk of loss. So we have to recognize the difference between the types of tools that we're working with. Everyone has a financial toolbox. Some people have more things shoved in it than other people, but most of us don't know which tool to use at the right time.
Yeah.
So if we can get clear on those things and those fundamental principles, you set yourself up for better decision-making. And so when things come by your desk, you know what to act on and how to do it at the same time.
What do you think needs to change to increase the level of financial education, the hunger within people to want to take ownership of their own financial destiny as opposed to just hoping for the best?
I think there's a couple components there. Number one, I think there's some fear. There's the fear of, I want to enjoy my life now and live it now, and I'm less concerned about the future. So, but because of that, they like know that they're sacrificing some of their future, but they're willing to do the thing now because they want it now. And then there's people who are on the opposite extreme of that, where they're sacrificing things now for some of the opportunities of joy and the memories they could create because they're so concerned and fearful about what their future looks like. So there's often these two extremes.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it comes down to the household level and how we're having communication in the household and the stresses that households are under. And those stresses show up in the children of today as they did when you were young and you described. Same thing for me. So those stressors appear in people's future life. And often because money, the subject of money tends to bring up stress in a conversation, that stress amplifies things. And if it's a stressful conversation, the brain naturally shuts down and says, I don't want to have the conversation.
Yeah.
So it creates this air of like, we shouldn't even be talking about it because everyone gets angry and upset. And therefore this is a bad thing to talk about, which means it becomes a taboo subject. And so no one ever talks about it and no one ever gets success with it. Well, we need to change that fundamentally. And until that's done, and so I believe it all begins at the household level, and that's where we need to begin. I've heard lots of people say, oh, we need to be teaching this in schools. Well, the problem with that is, who is the person that's going to teach it in school? Is it going to be
somebody that's broke
who's broke because they just got $40, $50, $100,000 in student loan debt and they just started teaching and they don't even know how to balance their own checkbook? Yeah. You want that same person teaching these fundamental principles? That doesn't make any sense. So it's so illogical. We need to get it done at the household level. That's where everything really begins. And so if you're struggling in having conversations, even with your spouse right now about money, try approaching things differently. Instead of talking about the money, talk about the things that money provides value and happiness for you, and recognize how when we have these happiness feelings, there's a derivative that money was able to fund that to create that outcome. So if we then can connect some of those positive things, now we can start talking about how do we make positive feelings around money appear in the household, and then the kids start to see that connection. So we do a lot of training on that in our organization, in our ongoing education. We teach people how to have family banking meetings, how to start broaching these topics so that, because we're in this for generation, we're looking for a generational impact. I don't care about your next 30 days. I care about your next three lifetimes. I want to talk about the three generations that follow you, and how does the decision you make right now today have a ripple effect, a rock in a pond for all those individuals that going to follow you? We can make you profitable and we can make them profitable too. Let's not take them out of the equation.
It's interesting, isn't it? Us as humans, I interviewed a doctor yesterday and we were talking about sexual health and erectile dysfunction. Let's just throw that into this podcast. And it's something that men don't want to talk about. And unfortunately, your finances fall into that same sort of category. It's like, well, we just don't talk about it. And I think this has come from, like you say, at the household level. My parents didn't talk about financial health, and there are other aspects of the family that don't talk about financial health as well. But I do, because I do. I want it to be different. And just like sexual health as well. You've got to have the conversations because it's such a fundamental part of us as humans. If you don't talk about it, it doesn't get any better. It just gets worse. And that's the same as your finances. So just a couple more questions. What would you say to say the younger generation, maybe not your kids, but a bit older than your kids, to what's the best advice that you could give them to start to, like, let's forget about products for now, but maybe we'll talk about habits. What advice would you give them to help them set themselves up for financial success?
Well, I think first and foremost, this is going to be probably different than what most people would say, but number one is get clear on who you are and how you operate best in the world. So I'm a big fan of something called the Kolbe Index. It's Kolbe, Kolbe, A index. It's about $50-$55 US to get it. When I first got that done, it helped me really get clear and clarify what my natural instinctual gifts are. Because I have a better understanding of that now, I believe it creates a lot more efficiency in my life. And I'm able to eliminate a lot of things that used to like waste time for me in the past. And time is our most precious commodity. We can't renew it or get it back. So if you can be more functionally efficient at an early age by understanding your natural way of getting everything done in the world, that creates more space for more income generation. It creates more space for less time wasted doing frivolous things that won't actually fill you and create joy. So if you get clear on some of those, it actually opens a lot of doorways. That's my personal opinion. And you're probably actually going to be more, more likely to be chosen for certain economic opportunities that are in your future. So I really think people should have a clear understanding of who they are. People try to figure out what they need to do with their life. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life when I was 18 years old. I had a pretty good idea I was going to do something awesome, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't have enough experience in the world. And even what I'm doing today, I absolutely love it. But fundamentally, I should be doing more of this, more podcasting, less meeting one-to-one with clients, more meeting with larger groups. So I'm still recognizing that there's opportunities to level up in my life. And I suspect there'll be a lot more of those that appear to me in the future. So even the experience I have today, I'm still growing. I'm still creating the best version of my future self. You know, the self that I am today has got a lot of room to grow. We never stop growing. So the sooner you become aware of that at an early age, the more open you are to all the experience life has to offer. That's what I would think. And then secondly, you got to start things early. Regardless of what you're going to do to create an income, you're going to need an income from some way. Try to create an income where you have a measure of control over it. So if you want to work for someone else, that's cool. Recognize what you could do on the side and start having money create money for you in simple ways and practice those things so you can have the experiences where you run up and like get hit by a bus. That's when you lose money. You want to lose little bits of it, but happen really fast so that you can get the experience under your belt. So that what happens is like your radar gets fine-tuned to recognize bad deals. All right. You're going to experience them. Do you want to wait until you're putting a lot of money into a really big deal? Or do you want to have a little bit of those happen along the way on smaller deals so you can get really clear on what to watch out for? It's going to happen. So you want to get clear soon. That's another thing I would say. Then you have to start putting away money soon because the potential of money working for you can only happen if you start putting it away. Yep. And the habit of putting it away is more important than what you're putting it into. Don't get focused on what it's going to, get focused on the habit of actually making it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Two more questions. What's the best advice you've ever received? And why was it such good advice?
I would say the best advice I ever received, firstly, was to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And the second best advice was to read Becoming Your Own Banker.
Right. Sweet. Because of my passion for physical health, what role do you see in... Maybe you can talk about what you do for yourself, but what role do you see the importance of physical health and wellness contributing to your financial health and wealth?
Well, no one can see it, but I'm actually standing on a treadmill right now. So I think that my physical health has a clear overlap, and I'm very focused on my physical health in the last, you know, year. And I have been in the last couple of years more and more so, because I've recognized after having a trade background, working really hard when I was in my youth, I created ailments, problems. You know, I've got a back that doesn't support me the way I'd like it to. So I'm recognizing that, especially with having kids, the things I want to be able to do with my kids, if I don't take care of number one, I won't be able to help take care of them. You know, when you're on the airplane and you're doing the safety demo, the first thing they say is if the masks come down, you got to put your mask on first before you can put it on someone else. So take heed of that and observe that you can't help anybody if you're not in a condition to be able to do it.
Yeah. Nicely said. Look, I think you've added a whole bunch of value here today, Richard. If people, I'm going to put the links below, but if you can give them a shout out now, if people want to get in touch with you, get involved with your coaching programs, etc., what's the best way for them to do that?
A couple quick, easy ones. They can go to learnibc.com. That's learnibc.com. Register for a quick webinar so they can understand how this thing works in your life. Really simple. They can get a copy of our book available for download, a free PDF of it. They can go to cashfollows.com. That's cashfollows.com. And they can get a copy of that book right to them. And then they can check out our podcast. We have a podcast called Wealth Without Bay Street. That is the Canadian equivalent of Wall Street. And, but it's okay. It's not a Canadian program. It's a North American program. Yep. We have a ton of fun and we interview authors, entrepreneurs, and also clients who are experiencing this process in their life and implementing.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll put those links below. Thanks everybody so much. Go and have a listen to Richard's podcast, reach out to him, tell him how much you enjoyed this podcast. If you didn't enjoy it, don't tell him that. And Richard, it's been a pleasure having you on the show here today. I'm going to give you the final word. What would you like to say as we close out?
Pick a path and get started. You know, you can pivot and change later, but whatever's holding you back in the world, just get started.
Love it. That's the same for your health and wellness too. Just get going, get moving, change today. Thanks, Richard.
Appreciate it, Rob. Thanks for having me on the program.